What is up, business owners, entrepreneurs, and probably my grandma? This is Business Vibe. In today's interview, we speak with Jacoby Attacco, a real estate investor and owner of a very successful farmers insurance agency. Jacoby shares how he grew his agency to over $500,000 a year and how he was able to take that income to buy multiple investment properties that generate over $20,000 per month. I hope you guys enjoy this interview. Please hit that subscribe button. I'm a brand new channel and I appreciate every single one of you. Enjoy.
All right. Well, if you don't mind, maybe get started.
Absolutely. Let's roll.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
Yeah. So I am 42 years old. I grew up in California, right in Santa Monica. I went to Santa Monica High School. I lived in Inglewood, so it was kind of a long commute, but that's where I spent pretty much my whole childhood. I ended up getting a basketball scholarship and went to UC Santa Barbara. And so I was there for 5 years. After college, I stayed there for another year, bartended a little bit, and then moved to Las Vegas in 2006. Kind of a random thing. Girlfriend at the time, wife now, we moved together. She was coming from Arizona State. We ended up in Vegas together. And then that's just kind of where we've made a home for ourselves. We didn't really expect to be here as long as we did. And then things just started rolling. You get established, you have kids, and suddenly it's 20 years later. So that's essentially what most of my background. I want to say I kind of started my career in the work world, or my occupation was in financial advising. That was with Ameriprise Financial. I did that for about a year. That was 2007. And then moved over to TD Ameritrade. So was kind of a broker there for about 3 years. That's right when the market was starting to crash. That was 2009 to 2011. Sort of got laid off in 2011. It was a little bit of a mutual thing. I kind of stopped working, to be honest. I got real lazy. I mean, new management, I got real bored with the job. And so there was a little bit of a gap in between there, but we did some traveling. My wife and I ended up getting married right around that time. And then I decided to jump into Farmers Insurance, which is what I do now. I have a Farmers Insurance agency. So I've had that for now since 2011, actually. So 13 years and still going strong.
And so what kind of inspired you to start the insurance agency instead of going like a different direction?
Yeah, I mean, when I first started in the corporate world, I was thinking of I really wanted my own business in some form or fashion. And initially that was the ultimate goal when I was working with Ameriprise, was you start off on the corporate side and then you would be able to go to independent. Usually after about a year or 2 years, you build up a book of business, you go independent. Well, when they had their management change, they really changed the way that people could, almost restrictive. Like they wouldn't allow people to go independent in the same way. So it was almost going to be impossible. And that's kind of where I lost motivation at Ameriprise, and I decided to move to TD Ameritrade. But even that was way more on the corporate side, but it was more salary with bonuses and set people that we were working with, customers and clients and everything. But even still, when I left that job, I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do next. And I got an email that was specific about starting your own business with Farmers Insurance, just a random email. I think I had my resume out. And I knew nothing about it, to be honest with you. It hadn't even crossed my mind, but I knew owning my own business was something I wanted to do at some point. And so I went and met with the district manager. He was like the recruiter at the time. And then we sat down, we kind of hit it off. We went over like the career path, and it inspired me. And it was just perfect timing. My wife was, she was working, she was doing really well. And we had some good savings from the years of me working at TD Ameritrade. And so it was one of those just perfect fit that I had the opportunity to dive in and not really have to worry too much about.
So Farmers, that's pretty much like home and car insurance, correct?
Yeah, we do car and home's the main stuff. We do a lot of business insurance and then life insurance.
So when like you first started, were like some of your beginning challenges kind of growing your client base and working to kind of like those clients?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's everyone's challenge. I mean, where I came from before, I always tell this when I hire people now, but the job working at like Ameriprise and TD Ameritrade, that was actually much harder than selling insurance. So it was much easier when I came over to do the insurance. Growing or getting clients, bringing them over was actually not as hard as I think it was to some other people who are coming from more of a, different industries where you weren't into sales as heavily, or you weren't used to marketing as heavily. I used to say when I would go meet with people at Ameriprise, if I met with 100 people, maybe 5 of them had disposable assets they could work with. They were looking to invest, they had the money to do it. And so it was a very small group. It was like a needle in a haystack you were looking for back then. Whereas I came over to the insurance side, everyone's got insurance. So it's more of just building relationships and bringing those people over. But I think the challenge for me more had to do with just kind of the fear of worrying about, you know, stepping on people's toes. I had this idea, this vision in my head. If you ever seen the movie Groundhog's Day, remember that movie at all? Mm-hmm. So they had that insurance guy, Needle Nose Ned. I had this vision of being like, I'm like, I don't want to be like that guy. You know, that this, I think there was like this, maybe just a bad feeling about insurance agents that I just didn't quite understand until I didn't really know any. And so a little bit of it, I think my main things were just getting over the hump of like considering myself an insurance agent, getting over the fear of going and talking to people and becoming like a specialist in my area. So, but you know, you get over that over the years.
So you said it wasn't as hard. You didn't think it was as difficult for you as maybe some people. What do you think? What do you think separated you? What do you think like made you better able to do that?
Yeah, it's 100%. I mean, there's two things actually. There was the main thing was my prior experience working at Ameriprise. It was just, I mean, you had to work really hard. It was commission only pretty much. You had to very much work to build your paycheck. That's just kind of how it was. And so, you know, I was used to grinding in that way. And so coming over here, I brought that same kind of mentality here. And a lot of the other people who start, like there was like 20 people or maybe 25 people who started around the same time, around the country as I started. We all went to training together and we kind of built this connection. None of those people are agents anymore. Like none of them have been able to get over the hump. They were around for a couple of years, most of them, and then they fizzled out. And I think the other thing that people do is they think of this job as like they think of it as like a W-2 job. And if you think about when you go into work on a W-2 job, you're there for a certain amount of time. You get paid based on being there. You get an hourly wage or a salary. But if you're on this side of it, you have to think of it as like, it's not so much how long you're here. It's how much did I get done? So did I do enough to find a client, right? That's kind of the mentality you have to have every day. Otherwise, you're just never going to have a paycheck. And I think that's a very tough transition for a lot of people who are coming from W-2 jobs or, you know, working hourly. It's just hard to transition to being a business owner. So that's probably one of the major things. And then the other big thing was just that I had savings and my wife was working. So we didn't need my income at that time. So I was able to reinvest just about all of it for that first year. And even going into the second year, you know, anytime I made money, I would put it back in marketing or hiring employees or something like that. So that was a big help.
Working for farmers, do they help you with marketing at all? Or is that all fall on your shoulders?
Nah, I mean, they give you, they call it ad aid, which is essentially they'll share in some of the cost of your marketing. But that's pretty much it. I mean, they have some like sales material. They have some different things that they like teaching things that they'll give you when you start out. But really, it's all you. You kind of learn that stuff.
What do you find is the best way to market insurance?
God, I mean, over the years, I've done so many different things. I think I started out very heavily on the phones, right? Kind of in the similar vein of cold calling. You know, you find a list of people, you call them, and you try to bring on clients. So I did a lot of that. There's things called leads. You can purchase leads, which is people who've gone online and might be looking for quotes and things like that. So that's a big part of it. You can do internet marketing like Facebook, social media, you know, people in your area. You can find people that way. I think what you really have to do is find 4 to 5 like really consistent marketing channels that you use and use those consistently. So for me, the ones were always the phones were always a big one because you can always make as many calls as you want on the phone. That's up to you to control. But the other one is building up networks like other insurance agents who are also trying to get clients, right? They're a great source of referral networks and referral partnerships because they don't sell everyone. We don't sell everyone. And so if you can refer them to some other people that you didn't sell and they do the same thing, you really build up a good network of finding additional clients. And after that, when you start to build up a bigger book of business, you start to get a lot of referrals just from your business, just from your clients that you have. So that's another big source that you don't really count on and you don't notice it until you start to grow and start to have clients because suddenly they get married, they have kids, they have family moves to town, they buy new stuff, new houses, new cars, and new boats and whatever else. And so they just start adding things on over the years. So I'd say those are probably the main ones. The other thing that I did a lot in when I first started was I used to do what's called lunch and learns, where I would essentially set up a lunch for like a group of employees, maybe like a group of 10. I'd buy them lunch. I'd give them a quick presentation. I'd leave like my business card and I'd have them fill out a flyer. And then I would call them back and, you know, basically just see if I could bring them on as clients, talk to them about their goals and their insurance, all that stuff. And I did a lot of that early on too. And that's really useful in building up long relationships. Really good marketing.
Sounds like it was kind of difficult in the beginning. Not that it's not difficult now, but it was a compound effect over time.
Yeah, it's. I think there's always in insurance and really any business, there's always going to be challenges. There's always things you've got to overcome and difficulties that have, especially in insurance right now. Insurance is a big, there's having all kinds of stuff happening in the industry. But once you go through a few of the cycles, it's much easier to get through it. You know how to go create a paycheck. It's kind of the way that I always think about it. And you just, I don't know, you've got a lot of relationships that you've built up and you just learn how to get through those hard times. So I think it's always hard, but as you start to do it longer, it is just that you get used to hard.
That's a great quote. You get used to hard. I like that. Kind of like the real estate side of things. So you're also a real estate investor. How did you first get interested in real estate investing?
You know, it was kind of random. I mean, I was terrified of real estate early on. I mean, we owned our house, but that was the extent of it. But I think there was sometime in like 2018, maybe 2019. By this time, my wife wasn't working. She was a stay-at-home mom. We started having kids and, you know, my business had picked up and doing really well. So we were starting to save up a little bit of money anyway. And at right around 2018, I had a friend of mine who was another insurance agent. We were talking about something. I don't remember what it was, but he's told me he had started reading books on Audible. And he's like, yeah, I got an Audible subscription. Instead of listening to the radio, I just listen to books on tape. And it was right at the time where I'm like, yeah, that sounds pretty interesting. I kind of want to do that. And initially it was to build my business. So I read things like The E-Myth to start out, you know, just some of the books that were going to be more conducive to sales and to business ownership and management. But at some point I got through those and I was starting to apply them to my business and we were doing well. I was hiring more people and creating these systems for my staff. But at some point I came across, I think it was Rich Dad Poor Dad, probably the first book, right? Like almost every real estate investor, that's how they start. I read that book and it was, for me, very eye-opening, right? It was illuminating. And I kind of just thought about it. And I'm like, wow, that's, you know, these are concepts I wasn't familiar with before. And I had been in the investing world, you know, working with people and creating mutual funds and retirement plans and all that. And even on this real estate side, I'm like, wow, I just didn't realize the stuff that you could do. And I really got obsessed with it. And so after that, I started reading every book I can on Audible. And I probably have gone through 120 books at this point. And so I just dug into it and I started to realize how well you could do with real estate. And it was right at the time where rates were starting to drop. My wife had actually started working and we didn't need any of her income. It was all just extras. I felt like I had a really big safety net to even dive into real estate because I was making good money and my wife had this extra income. And we had savings. So I'm like, okay, worst case scenario, I mean, we can float it and do what we need to do. So I think right around that time, that's when I got really interested in real estate and decided, you know, and I think the other thing is I created a good team here at my office as well. So I also freed up some time for myself and being able to dive in and kind of pursue real estate without having to give up, you know, some of the things we were doing here and still do well here. That was a big part of it as well.
What was, when you first started out, what was your initial goal with investing?
Hey, so with real estate, I think early on, I wanted to buy. I was thinking, I think everyone starts this way. I was thinking numbers wise, it would make sense to buy like a fourplex, you know, an apartment complex, or just, I really just wanted one piece of property. And I was like, if I can get that, that would be awesome. That's like an additional, you know, few hundred bucks a month, maybe $1,000 a month, you know, something like that. But as I started to really dig in and I read more books and I started to go look at properties and I started to meet people, actually right next door to my office is another, two doors down, there's another business. It's a shipping business and it's owned by a lady by the name of Lisa Sutton, Lisa Song Sutton. She's really big into real estate. She owns a real estate agency. She also owns the shipping business. And she's, I don't know if you're familiar with like Ken McElroy, obviously Robert Kiyosaki. She's like a constant guest on their channel. Cool. So we happened to start talking one day and I was telling her and I didn't know she was really big in real estate at the time. But I was talking to her and she was telling me, you know, yeah, you got to get into real estate. It's phenomenal. And she was like, you know, she has a financial advisor or a mentor who told her, like, you need to focus on buying one property every year. If you can buy one property a year, you'll be able to retire, you know, within 10 years, basically. You can do well in financial independence and all that stuff. And to me, that sounded nuts. I'm like, no one can buy one property every year. That's just not feasible. But But at the same time, I started thinking about like, all right, if I were to do that, how would I put that together? And it really changed my perspective of finding deals and how to, you know, what would be a good criteria to make sure that happened. And it was right again at the same time my wife was working, and her job I knew was not going to be around forever. It's very heavily reliant on her dad, who's an older guy. And so I wanted to really get enough real estate to replace her income, you know, at the time while we had it. So that was kind of my main focus. Was initially it was just one, and then it just kind of became buy one a year if we can do that, and until we can replace my wife's income.
So what was your first piece of real estate? You mentioned you were kind of when you first started thinking about it, you were really leery. How did that go? How did your first investment go?
Yeah, I mean, so I think everyone's scared of debt when they start. It's kind of the idea. And I think that's completely normal. I was one of those too, because you just, you know, it's terrifying. You don't know if you're going to be able to rent it out. You know, is it going to be difficult? Are they going to trash the property? You have all those same concerns. And so what I started doing was I changed my mindset to where I wanted to buy such a good deal that I didn't need to put as much money in, and I would do things kind of creatively so that I could use less money, but then I can buy more properties. And so I went out and started meeting with a lot of different realtors, and they were starting to show me properties. We were going, you know, touring things. And as I kept coming back and putting my numbers on a spreadsheet and getting to know the neighborhoods and the numbers, nothing was looking good. Like nothing was just going to allow me to buy the way that I wanted to buy. So what I ultimately ended up doing was I read another book called, it was a book by Anson Young called Finding and Funding Great Deals. And it's a book really based from the perspective of a real estate flipper. So how they go in and buy properties below market value, how they fix them up, and then how they, you know, make a profit on it. Well, I didn't want to flip. I didn't need the extra income for that purpose. I just wanted to build up like income, monthly income. When I looked at that book, I was like, okay, well, there are some strategies these guys utilize to go find property off market, not with a realtor, right? And that's what I decided to focus on. It's like, all right, I'm going to do this. I'm not going to flip the properties, but I'm going to try to find them below market. And then I'm just going to keep them. I'll rent them out. And then if I do it that way, I'll be able to keep using less capital. I'll be able to pull capital out later and I can recycle. And it would allow me to meet my one property a year goal if I do it that way. And so that's actually what I ended up doing. Instead of working through a realtor, I think I still had realtors sending me properties, but I just started marketing to people myself. You know, I started having conversations with people, and almost everyone has some kind of real estate thing that they're doing. They either want to move to a new house, they want to buy a house, or they want sell a house. You know, there's always something people want to do with real estate. So when you start asking people and you start having these conversations, I started coming across people who were looking at selling their house before they had talked to a realtor. And so it opened up these conversations that I'm like, hey, well, I happen to be open to, I'm looking to buy a house. And then I would give them kind of a pitch. You know, if you think about the costs of going through a realtor, they're going to pay realtor fees. They're going to have to fix up the house. They're going to have it shown, but through a bunch of people. So I was just taking those concerns off of their plate when I had these conversations, and people were interested. You know, I got in a lot of good conversations, and my next door neighbor almost sold me his house. We got really into there, but the price he wanted was too high for what I needed, and we couldn't meet in the middle. And so there was that. I've had a couple of clients. We've gotten conversations where I got one under contract and then we fell out. And then there was one lady who she was an old client of mine, and I happened to know she was trying to sell her house the year before. And so I happened to call her. I was like, hey, you know, and I just kind of opened up a conversation. I ended up going to her house and talking to her. And then we just started talking about like why she didn't sell her house before, what she wanted to do. And it just turned out that she was in a really, really hard financial situation. I mean, she was blowing through money. She was on a reverse mortgage as well. She's an older lady, and just honestly, she was going to be out on the street in like, you know, within 6 months, because she was running out of money, and she just didn't handle her finances very well. And she had a daughter who was not anywhere near her. She had a daughter who was living in, I think it was Alabama or Mississippi, but they'd stopped speaking. And her daughter, you know, she was going to go move with her daughter the year before. They ended up in this big fight. So she ended up not moving. And then she was just out there on her own. So we ended up coming together like to kind of create a deal. I ended up buying her house from, and then I let her live there for free for an extended amount of time. And so I gave myself a discount to do that, but she was able to live there for free. I helped her pay off like all of her bills, her car payments, her credit cards. I helped her get her finances back in order, just a bunch of different things, just to make sure she was up and getting run. And I ended up getting her back connected with her daughter too. So her daughter came and visited. We became really close. And so it kind of worked out. But that being said, because of that, I got a really, really good deal on the house too. I mean, when she eventually moved out, which ended up being like 5 or 6 months later, I was able to put a tenant in there. I had bought that house in cash. And so when I put a tenant in there, which I had a tenant in there for a few months. And so I kind of gotten comfortable with the idea of renting. I saw how hard or difficult it was to get a renter in there and how to manage it. And I'd still been reading lots of books on management and all that stuff. So eventually felt comfortable enough that I refinanced and then pulled all the money back out and went and bought another house. And so that's how I think the fact that I got such a good deal on the first house really set me up to do it again and again as many times as we've done.
That is so cool. And so do you primarily invest in single family properties now?
Sort of. So it's all single family properties here in Vegas, because I would have loved to do something more on the multifamily side. But problem is, in Vegas, they are just not in good areas. They're overpriced. You know, they're not anywhere that I would want to manage myself. And I manage all my properties myself. So I passed on them. What I've decided is, if I end up doing an apartment or something like that, it'll be outside of Vegas. Most likely it'll be in a different market. But I think that's eventually where we'll go. For right now, it's just single family. Two of the houses that we have, though, it was the second house I bought and third house we bought. We actually rent them out by the room. So it's almost like a multifamily property. Each one of those has 7 tenants in it. And so that's basically like a multifamily, but it's actually in a house though.
Oh, so how does that work? Is it kind of like through an Airbnb, or do you manage it all yourself and bring in the tenants yourself?
No, yeah, they're all long-term tenants. I have, you know, so essentially it was a big house that we found. And this is, again, this when we bought this one, it was 2021. And so I bought the first house, that was 2020. We refinanced, bought the second house in 2021. And honestly, I spent the whole year looking for a house, like, because I had money, was looking to buy. I went and made offers on house after house, and none of them were working out. Like, they were just, you got to remember 2021, people were buying houses quick. people were going over market and all that stuff. And there was one house I very nearly got, and it was, I think it came up on I have like a search that I do in my area and everything, came up on my search. And I remember I tried to get there first. As soon as I got there, I knew I wanted it. Like, even before I got there, I told the realtor, or I told my realtor, hey, make an offer on this house. Go over, you know, I was like 25,000 over. This meets all my numbers. He tried to make the offer, but their realtor was like, because this was it had been on the market for like 10 minutes. And he's like, don't you want to see the house? And we're like, no, I know this is good. I know the area. I know the house. I see the square. Like, it's fine. This will work. And so they were like, we really feel more comfortable if you go check out the house. So I'm like, all right, no problem. So we went like immediately to the house. I'm like, yep, everything, it's perfect. I don't need to know anything else. Make the offer. And they ended up taking a day or 2 days to think over the offer. They were thinking about saying yes. And the guy ended up selling the house to someone else. He ended up selling it to a family member who wanted to buy the house for a lower price than I offered, but it was a family member deal. So once we missed out on that, I was really like, oh my God, that would have been perfect. But at that point, I decided to change my strategy. And just over dinner with my wife, we were talking about it. And I'm like, you know, and we had kind of talked about the rent out the room model before. She had rented rooms. She was a roommate in college. I had roommates in college, so we were used to that. But at the same time, I was like, you know, this might be a good option in this market, just because everything's flying. It allows us to buy a house and not need to get a huge discount, because we can just kind of pivot and get more cash flow if we go this way. So we ended up looking for, kind of deciding we were going to go that route. And I mean, that night we found the house that was perfect. So we went and saw it the next day. It was a 5-bedroom house, 3,000 square feet. But when we went and looked at it, we realized we can add 2 more bedrooms to it and it would still work really well functionally. And that's essentially what we did. So we ended up buying that house. We got a good deal on it. That house is appreciated a lot too. And then we got all the tenants in, which was, you know, surprisingly easier than I thought it was going to be. Those things stay pretty occupied. And because we can do 7 bedrooms instead of, you know, it allows us to push down the rents a little bit. So the tenants get a great deal. And because we have so many tenants in there, we also get a good deal. So it's kind of a win-win. And so that one worked out really well. So we were able to duplicate it and bought another one and did the exact same thing. It's the exact same layout and everything. Like, they're 3 blocks from each other.
When you're on the internet, and it was like this before even COVID, and even, you know, all the time, it's always really hard for people to get around to be comfortable with investing, you know, in the current market, do you think it's still possible for somebody to start out investing?
It's much, much harder, right? It's much more difficult. I mean, obviously when rates were zero and, you know, or 3% for us, it makes it much easier. And obviously house prices had gone up, but your payments were so low and you just had a lot more, you could factor in a lot more things. So now it's much more difficult, but it's definitely still possible. I think one of the things that you have to learn now, because the typical way people go buy properties is they get a realtor, they see what's on the MLS, they look in certain areas, and then, you know, maybe a house needs a little bit of work. But either way, once they find a property on the MLS and they run the numbers, it's almost impossible to cash flow right now if you buy it that way. Mm-hmm. So what I think people have to realize, if they want to invest now, they have to get more creative. They're either going to have to do something like a room rental, right, which gives you the ability to get higher cash flow. Or they're going to have to learn to purchase creatively through like owner financing, or the last property we bought we bought it through a method called subject to. So it was a lady in foreclosure. She, you know, needed to sell the house pretty quick. We were able to just take over her loan for her. So we got her loan terms and then we put a tenant in there and getting payments and all that stuff. But doing those methods allow you to take over the advantages of her loan, right? She had a lower interest rate than we would have been able to. Right, we didn't have to go through the whole loan process. We just paid her out based on some of the equity.
On like the uglier side of real estate investing, have you ever had a significant like problem, something that you just didn't see coming that was really, really tough to face?
I mean, I think there's always things that I think, you know, when you look online and you see people who are investing, anyone who owns enough houses, there's always something going on, right? There's no way around it. But I think if your expectations are that things happen, then it makes it easier. You're not like I give you a very easy example. My wife and I are very different in that, things that bother her don't bother me. So like for the room rental, for example, I would get calls. It seemed like once a month for a few weeks, for a few months, I was getting calls of people like locking themselves out of the room. Right. And so I would like, oh, okay, you know, I would drive down there, which is about a 15-minute drive or 20-minute drive. I'd unlock the door. I charge them like $30 for every time I did it. And I would go back. Now, my wife, to her, that is like end of the world. She's like, this is too much work. You should sell the property. That's kind of her mentality. You know, things like that will happen. I've had, especially with the room rentals, not every tenant's going to get along. I've learned how to really manage so that I can get people out if they're not fitting into the house. You have to learn how to be like a conflict resolution guy, right? I've definitely had people. I've got like one of the first tenants I had, he was upstairs. He was a younger kid. He was like 24 or something like that. Below him was an older gentleman who was working nights in security, and I had wood floors. So the guy upstairs, anytime he'd walk, he'd be waking up the guy below. And it became like this big issue that they started really like almost getting to the point of fighting. And I think at one point, obviously the younger kid was feeling intimidated by the older guy. The younger kid's dad called me, and I think I was out of town at the time, but he called me and he's yelling and he's like, yo, if you don't do something about this guy, I'm going over with my gun and I'm going to take care of it myself. You know, it was getting that dramatic. And so I'm like, okay, calm down. I'll take care of it. And so, you know, stuff like that'll happen. And I've had not anything that aggressive, but little things where tenants just don't get along. And I just end up coming in between and kind of resolving it for the most part. And a lot of times it's just you get your base of people who are going to be there for a long period of time. And then every time a room comes open, you've got a new personality who comes in that you've got to kind of figure out if they fit in and fill them out and stuff. And so I don't know, it's easier now. And I know my people really well now, so I can kind of handle it a lot easier. But I think that's one of the challenges, is just really realizing that you're going to have to deal with conflict.
Do you mind, so kind of coming toward like the end of the interview, do you mind talking about revenue numbers?
I don't mind at all. So on insurance, and again, I've been doing this for like 13 years now, so it's built over time. 2023 was one of the best years we've had. And so it's always grown, but last year we had a much bigger growth. So I want to say last year we had about 550,000 in gross sales. The year before that was probably like 420 to 430. So it was a big jump, but 450,000 is probably the norm now that we've kind of hit a new hope. Hopefully it continues to grow, but yeah, we're 550,000 is what we did last year.
Good for you. And your rentals, how many rentals do you own? What does that kind of produce for you?
So there are 7 rentals and 19 tenants. And so they're all paying between 700 to, like, in some of the rentals, I think my highest rental is 2,100. My gross each month is 19,000. I think it's $19,050. So just over 19,000.
So coming to the end of the interview and the personal insights type thing, there's something I always love to ask everybody I interview to see kind of how, like, they started their journey and how they were brought up. What was your childhood like? And you kind of talked a little bit about always wanting to own your business a little bit.
Yeah, I don't know where that came from, to be honest with you. I had this vision of my dad. My mom and dad were divorced when I was really young, but I had a good relationship with both of them growing up. But I remember my dad used to come pick me up from, you know, basketball practices and football practices. And he would always be driving a really nice car and wearing, like, a suit. And I don't even think he, like, ran a business or anything. He just liked to look good. He was kind of flashy. But for some reason, because of that, I always had this, like, corporate idea of what I wanted to do. I don't know where that got inspired, but I think a lot of that, where I was growing up, I lived in Inglewood, which was a much more, I'm going to say impoverished. It was a poorer area than I went to school at, which was in Santa Monica, which is now, funny enough, a poor area. But at the same time, it was just, I would see my friends and I'd see people doing really well. And I'd have this vision of, like, how they were doing. And I think I always aspired to get to that level, but just never thought I could. So I think that probably shaped a big chunk of it. You know, my mom, she's an accountant, a CPA. She does really well for herself, but there's never really been anyone in my family who's been big into entrepreneurship and business and, you know, rental properties, things like that. So I think you just kind of develop it over time as you start to see, you know, where your opportunities are in life.
For someone new to real estate investing, what would your best piece of advice be for them? And I know you kind of covered, you know, these days with prices the way they are, you know, you kind of get creative, but what would you say would be your best piece of advice?
With real estate, people used to say this and it used to annoy the hell out of me, but people would always say, you know, knowledge is power, right? Like, the more you know, the more money you can make. That is 100% true with real estate, right? There is, I almost everyone I know, and this is something else I've learned, is that people aren't that much different, right? You'll see someone doing something really cool and you want to aspire to do that. It's not unattainable, right? They're only doing something that you just don't know how to do, or they've spent more time doing. Same goes with real estate. If you go out and just, I mean, honestly, I'd say read as much as possible, read some of these books, because there is so much information that you'll get from these books. And when you have that information, it's not that it's just going to make you rich, but what it'll do is it'll give you preparation for opportunities. So, like, when rates drop to zero, you know what to do, right? Or when rates go up to 8%, you know what to do, right? You know, what are some different pathways I can take for this? If you start to hang around people who are doing what you want to do, then you can learn from them. You'll get mentorship. You know, you can, you know, they'll give you advice. One thing about real estate people is they love to talk about their real estate. So you can, I mean, you ask the right questions, you get in the right groups, and you learn the right things, and you can honestly do much better than you ever assumed. Like, even I talked to you about Lisa telling me that I should buy one property a year. Like, I would have never thought of even being able to do that. And what are we in? We're in 2024. I started in 20 years. So we bought 7 properties since then, right? So we've done more than one a year. We've only bought one this year, but we got to the point where we were buying 2 for the last few years. And so you don't realize what you're capable of because you don't know how to do certain things, right? You don't know how to create a spreadsheet to make it so that you can duplicate your finances and buy over and over again. So if you learn those kind of things, it's like having more tools in your tool belt, right? If you have those tools, you'll know how to use them when the opportunity comes.
And what about your advice for someone that's looking to start their own insurance agency?
Yeah, insurance, phenomenal business. I think it's been around forever. It's probably going to be around forever. There's always going to be, as long as there's lawyers, there's going to be insurance. So I think with insurance, it is, I mean, both of these are similar in this, but you got to remember, insurance isn't a job. It is, you're building a business. And so you have to make sure that you're financially in a position where you can fund the business properly, right? Same thing. You've got to learn as much as you can. Sales is a big part of almost anything you do, especially insurance, right? You've got to be able, if you can't bring on customers, you're not going to have an insurance agency very long. So I think you want to really just kind of that same advice of learn as much as you can. I read a lot of stuff on sales and business ownership. And then also, if you're funding correctly, you want to reinvest in your business early on. And you want to use the reinvest in things like employees. Having really good employees is the difference between having a mediocre agency versus having a stellar agency. The better your employees are, the better you can pay them, the longer they're going to stay, and the better resources they have to do their job well. That's going to be the difference for doing really well for insurance as well.
Awesome. And so finally, where can people find more information about you and your services?
Yeah, I actually started a YouTube video. That's probably the best, or YouTube channel. That's probably the best way to reach me. And it's just my first and last name, Jacoby Attacco. Find me, right, find my channel. I've been putting a lot of content up, really focused on real estate. I've got to add in some insurance stuff, which is kind of next, but that's usually the best way to find me is right there.